Good morning. I call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. It's 9:05 a.m. Please silence all cell phones. I'm joined today by Co-Chair Hoffman, Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Bishop, Senator Keel, and Senator Merrick. Senator Wilson is away on other business. On today's agenda, we have Senate Bill 113 by the Finance Committee. This is the first hearing for the Senate Bill 113, the REA fund, especially dealing with Mount Edgecombe High School. This is the initial hearing. At a future hearing, we'll be bringing in the affected agencies and talk about the fiscal impact as well as decide on further actions. Invite Kenneth Alper to come on up to the head of the table. He has a brief PowerPoint and we'll head further. Mr. Alper, please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you and good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Ken Alper, staff to Senator Olson and the Finance Committee. I'm happy to present Senate Bill 113. This is a committee bill that was put together by yourself and the other co-chairs on the topic of the regional education and attendance areas and how their funding is used and would be used going forward. So what this bill does, the REA fund, or officially the Regional Education Attendance Area and Small Municipal School District Fund, provides grants to school districts within these REAs, which are the regions that administer schools outside of organized boroughs and cities, as well as small municipal school districts. And in statute, current law, these small districts are defined as places with average daily membership, student body count less than 300, and full assessed property value in those districts of less than 500,000 per student. And what the bill, Senate Bill 113, would do is expand the eligible uses of this fund per year to also be able to fund projects, construction and major maintenance at Mount Edgecombe High School in Sitka, which is a regional boarding school, of course, administered and run by the state of Alaska, as well as major maintenance on teacher housing in eligible areas, specifically housing owned either by the district or by the state itself. Embedded within the REAA fund statutes is a cap. The fund is not currently allowed to carry a balance more than $70 million. Senate Bill 113 would also eliminate that cap, therefore would be able to hold. And part of the thinking, I think, on that, Mr. Chairman, is soon and I'll get to that a slide or two later. The REA funding from the state is tied by formula to the state's bond debt reimbursement paid to the urban school districts. Because there's been a moratorium for several years on new school bond debt reimbursement from the state, and that will be expiring in, I think, 2025, there's an expectation there'll be something of a jump. When there's a jump in bond debt reimbursement to the school districts, that would carry with it a commensurate jump to the REA appropriation, and we want to make sure that there's adequate room for the fund to be able to receive these increased amounts in a few years. So that was included within this legislation as well.
Mr. Hopper, before you go to this next slide, I have a question on the $70 million cap. How close are we to it now?
Mr. Chairman, hold on just a second. I have a chart from the Education Department.
You can actually come get back with it later on in the slide presentation if it disrupts your presentation.
Sure. And at the end of FY22, from what I can see, there was about $36.9 million available in the fund after what went into the fund that year and what was encumbered or spent out from the fund, at least in FY22. So we're not near there now, but there's some thought that the deposits will get larger in future years.
And what has been the history? Has it gone up and down? Has it been close to the gap? And all of a sudden it's down? Or what is the history? Do you have that?
Generally speaking, Mr. Chairman, my understanding, and when the Department of Education is here, they'll be able to speak in much greater nuance and detail than I can. The money comes in every year, and they commit about that amount of money in that year. There might be a time lag as far as getting the money expended. But by and large, they don't try to maintain a balance. They might have a larger project that's at the top of the list they're trying to save up a couple years of funding for, that sort of thing. But no, they don't intend to carry a balance other than preparing for their next project. But I don't believe $70 million has been a problem in the past, but my understanding is there's some thought that it might be one in the near to medium term future.
Okay. Go ahead with your presentation.
So the REAA fund, and I put its code for the budget nerds out there that like to track that stuff within legislative finance system, it's code 1222, was created as a response to this, what's known as the Casile case. That was an education equity lawsuit brought by rural Alaska residents that the state did not fairly pay for their schools the way the urban schools were funded. And there were various, in the years after that, mechanisms to try to equalize funding and appropriate fairly. But it wasn't until about 10 years later that Senate Bill 237 passed that created the so-called REAA fund and a formal mechanism to and a formula for this. What's on slide number three here is some of the findings section within Senate Bill 237, and I underlined the key portion. The method of funding capital projects for school construction and major maintenance does not provide rural schools with adequate or equitable funding opportunities. So this REAA fund was created to equalize that funding situation for the rural schools after Casile. So the formula, which is in current statute, says that you take what the state is currently paying on school bond debt reimbursement. And I'll pause for a moment here. I think all the senators here understand, but the people at home might not. There's over the years, the various school districts accrue bond debt to build new schools. Depending on when that school was built and what the statute in effect was at the time, the state would be committing to pay 60 or 70, or in some cases, I think 80% of the school district's bond debt. And then every year within the operating budget, there is a line item where we appropriate money to the municipalities to cover that their share of the school bond debt, and that's been happening for decades. So that formula then, that number gets run through this formula in statute, taking the percentage of the schools that are in the city and borough school districts, but not the small municipal ones because they're inside the REAA fund. And then you multiply it by this number, 24.4%, which was part of the 2010 legislation based on some ratio in existence at the time, and it generates a number. That number finds its way also to the operating budget, and at the bottom here, it's section 45I of the current committee substitute that Mr. Eklund presented last week, $27,897,000 is the FY24 appropriation expected to occur to the REAA fund by formula. So that's the number we're talking about, and again, it might grow somewhat in years to come. As recently as 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was closer to $40 million. But what's been happening, frankly, is as we've not been adding new school bond debt to the mix, and some of the old school bond debt has been paid down just through the normal course of debt service, the school bond debt number within the budget has decreased, and therefore the REAA number in the budget has been decreasing as well. So $28 million next year. And why do we need a change? I mean, ultimately, that's all background. This slide before you is what the bill itself is doing. Mount Edgecombe High School is a state-run boarding school operated by the Department of Education. It's in a little bit of a gray area. It's not, strictly speaking, a school district. It's not a regional education area. It's almost like a division within the Department of Education whose function is to run a boarding high school. So they don't have their own bond debt. They don't have a well-established process to get on the major maintenance list. When they need a capital project, they have their own side process where they work with the governor's office and try to get inside the governor's capital budget. But they kind of fall between the cracks in many ways. So that the intent of the legislation here is to make them eligible because they are a school that serves predominantly rural Alaska residents. That we could use the REAA fund to fund the capital needs of Mount Edgecombe, which I've heard. I've never visited the school myself, but my understanding is the facilities are old, in need of a fair amount of repair and upgrade. The second issue being resolved by this bill has to do with rural teacher housing. As you well know, Mr. Chairman, because a lot of this is in your district, the schools out there often have to provide housing for teachers who are not permanent residents of the community. That housing, some of it is older and in disrepair, and is in many ways part of the school itself. However, the way the current formula funding works, we can't use the funding that might be helping the schools themselves to also help upgrade and maintain the teacher housing. So this, the definition changes in Senate Bill 113 would expand eligibility to the teacher housing as well. Should this bill go forth, the Department of Education is requesting two new people to help take care of it. What are the two new people for? One of them would be figuring out the capital requirements of Mount Edgecombe's facilities and applying for the grants. There's a little bit of a conflict of interest that they're trying to avoid here. They have the people already there whose job is to review the applications from all the other school districts and rank order them and get them scheduled. But those can't be the same people looking at Mount Edgecombe because the person asking can't be the same person answering. Therefore, they would have a dedicated person who would work on the CIP, the Capital Improvement Plan for Mount Edgecombe. The second person would be someone with some degree of expertise in housing, which they don't currently have, so that they could better review applications for funding from the school districts for teacher housing. And what's on this slide, really, Mr. Chairman, is I'm just paraphrasing from their fiscal note narrative. There's not a whole lot of new insight from me on that slide.
So, Mr. Alper, just to make sure that I'm straight, you're talking about teacher housing, teacher housing throughout the whole state of Alaska?
It would be, Mr. Chairman, teacher housing in areas that are eligible to receive REA funding. So in the REA.
Or Anchorage or Fairbanks or some other first-class cities like that?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman. The teacher housing in an urban school district would not be eligible in the changes contemplated in this bill.
And has there been anything happened recently that's caused this to come to the top of the priority list?
My understanding, just from what I've seen, is that there's a lot of need, that a lot of the teacher housing is older and in need of repair, and the districts and the administrators are scrambling to find funding to help take care of it.
Okay. It's my understanding there's been a number of communities that have had water and sewer problems with a major issue with freeze up with the water lines, and so that's the reason I have what I've heard. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. On the slide five, on the, just teacher housing, you don't have to go back there, but we had talked about this some last year when we had the REEDS Act before us and had some conversation here. You know, just as one member of the Finance Committee, I had talked about tying teacher housing to the REEDS Act, just in the concept that we have these poor performing districts that and we want to increase outcomes in schools. I hear that a lot in the building, and to quote my senator from the right, you know, some of our villages running water's 2 5-gallon buckets going to the well, and teacher housing is very important. I think I like this in the bill. I just think we ought to have an emphasis on those districts that have the least amount of housing, and that they should be prioritized first to get housing.
I totally agree, because teacher housing is such a critical factor that if somebody's not doesn't have adequate housing, they're not going to have a good time. They're not going to be around for very long. So, Mr. Alper, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The last meaningful slide is just a quick sectional analysis, and it's mostly in definitions. AS 1411025 is the section that authorizes the Department of Education to make grants out of the REA fund, and it expands that to include these two new areas, Mount Edgecombe and the teacher housing. And then section 2030A is really the description of the purpose of the fund itself, and it adds these things to the description of the purpose itself. The third subsection of the bill, 030B, removes that $70 million cap so that it deletes the section outright. There would no longer be a cap on the amount of money that the REAA fund could hold. And it's a three-section bill. It's only 2 pages long, relatively straightforward.
One of the questions I have is, how did they come up with it, and what was the reason for the cap being at $70 million?
Mr. Chairman, I honestly do not know. It goes back before my time working in these issues. There might be another co-chair that has a little insight into that, but I couldn't tell you myself.
One of the questions I have for back on the slide five, it talks about if they have capital needs that there, they have to go through the governor's office. It seems like a very cumbersome, awkward way to try and get yourself into the budget if you need some type of a large improvement, whether it's demolishing old buildings because of them being World War II type facilities, or if you're going to try and build up a new building.
Mr. Chairman, what you're saying makes tremendous sense. That there's a whole cluster of statute that describes the operation of the Mount Edgecombe School. It has, you know, it's well defined, and buried in there about how it's treated as sort of a quasi school district as far as counts for what the school schedule is and how the teacher pay works and all those sorts of things. There's a little line that says they should work with the governor's office to identify their capital needs or something like that. It's sort of half a sentence, but it's not a well-defined process. And again, we're trying to embed them in with the larger process of prioritizing other rural school needs.
Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Good morning, Mr. Alper. Is there any history of vetoes of the fund capitalization for REAA?
Mr. Alper.
Through the chair, Senator Merrick, thank you for asking the question. Yes, always in parallel with the school bond debt itself. You know, the courts have been pretty strident on this, and governors, both Governor Walker and Governor Dunleavy, who vetoed these funds, have worked in parallel. When they have vetoed some or part of the school bond debt reimbursement, they have also vetoed, at the same ratio, a portion of the REAA capitalization. And it's considered a capitalization. It's in the fund cap portion of the budget. However, continuing through the chair, last year, the legislature in the supplemental budget put in a large amount of money to essentially pay back the municipalities and the REAA for all of the past vetoes. At FY 17, 19, 20, and 21, I believe, all had some degree of partial or non-funding. Around $220 million went to municipalities for the back bond debt, and $83 million went to the REAA fund. So there was a large lump sum deposit in the FY22 supplemental to this fund. And the bulk of that money went to a new school in Nepakiak.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Speaking of that, Mr. Alper, there was a piece of paper that's been circulated by the Department of Education related to school construction, as well as some of the deposits there. Like, could you comment on what's going on with those appropriations that have gone to this fund in the past, as well as the result, like the school in the Nepakiak, that had a fairly high outstanding balance?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'm happy to, and on what I think I'll do, once I finish, I'll hand my copy of this over to the committee so it could be put on the record and scanned. Everyone should be able to see it. And it's a 10-year history of the REAA fund, what the appropriations were and what the projects that were funded with it. Going back to FY 13, $35 million appropriation, and then another $35 million in FY 14, and then they spent $70 million on three schools in Nightmute, in Quinnahock, and in Queefluck. They have a rank order. They have a priority. So, and the numbers were getting smaller. And then in FY21, because of a veto, there was zero appropriation. FY22, the regular number was $17.1 million. And then the number I just quoted to Senator Merrick was actually $83,962,500 of a supplemental appropriation. So now suddenly they had almost $100 million. 55 of that went to Nepakiak. And then with the money put in for FY23, another $32 million, it's funded a relatively broad suite of projects throughout rural Alaska. The largest single item was the school replacement project in Murtarvik, and there's an upgrade project in Minto. And as of the end of FY23, again, it's anticipated there'll be $22.9 million left in the fund.
My understanding, though, Murtarvik is not a replacement school. It's a brand new school, because that's where the city of Nutak is going to be moving to. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, yes. The tagline on the document in front of me says relocation replacement. That sure sounds like a new school.
Okay. Your district, Senator Hoppen, you want to comment on it?
It's Newark.
Well, since a number of the schools have gone into other districts besides, we'll hold it to that center statement.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this bill is a good start. I think it brings forward some issues dealing with Mount Edgecombe that they're kind of the odd person out, odd school district out in the state, and therefore leaves them at, I think, a disadvantage for advocacy, dealing particularly with maintenance and new construction and upgrades. And then having, as an example, having the school going through the Department of Education all the way, you know, through the system on capital needs and then up through OMB and then to the governor's submission is a different track than everybody else has to take. And I think it does leave them at a disadvantage because they don't, there's not that, you don't hear the advocacy at the table. There's not a, you know, and when we look at the school and the performance is exceptional from the Alaska students coming from Edgecombe. But you look at their housing, they're in a World War II bunkhouse. You know, World War II has been over for 70 some years. They are in need of classroom expansion, and they're in need of site remediation and cleanup. And then we, as I recall, there was a photo of some of the old military, the gas station garage and mechanic site. And one of the committee members here mentioned it looked like Beirut bombed out right next to the road. And I don't think that looks good for the state, being the owner of the asset. It doesn't look good for the school. And it's certainly not safe for the young Alaskans having exposure to those buildings where you have people, vagrants moving in and trying to sleep in them. There's mattresses in them, broken windows. It's horrible. It's embarrassing, frankly. And the point being, this goes on for year after year, and the department never comes in and advocates to clean it up. Their response is it doesn't meet the, you know, top criteria to address that. And I have a hard time with that concept looking at it. So I think that's, you know, part of the impetus of this bill is to try to put Mount Edgecombe on a fair playing field with all the other school districts. And when we spend a lot of time and effort concerned with our scores, collapsing of our scores or performance of our schools. But let's not forget the schools that are performing well. You know, let's not take the schools that are performing well and make them underperformers. Let's continue to work to strive to make them even perform better. So, Mr. Chairman, I think this is a good start of a bill. I'd like to work with you and your office on some of the issues that the Department of Ed has brought forward and concerns and see over the interim that we can't work on a structure to improve Mount Edgecombe's ability to advocate or have advocacy for that school other than a few of the elected officials in the legislative side trying to maintain the performance and the adequacy of that school. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm willing to work with you over the interim and see what we can do to make Edgecombe even better than it is today.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Excuse me. I also believe this is an issue that is long overdue and need to be addressed. I would also state that I had many people from my region and your region and Senator Bishop's region attend these schools, and they are some of the highest achieving grades throughout the state of Alaska. And it should also be noted that many of the Native leaders have graduated from Mount Edgecombe, and they do receive a great education there. There is a wait list of people that want to get into the school, and we should be looking at what is being done right in Edgecombe as an example of success of education in the state of Alaska. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hoffman, did you go to Edgecombe? That you're from a rural area?
I was fortunate to have a community in Bethel that had a regional, had a high school. Bethel has had a high school since 1935, so I'm a proud graduate of Bethel High.
I just want to make sure that we have no conflict of interest here. I didn't go to Edgecombe either, and so I went to another one, another boarding school. But as I look at the top performance that Edgecombe has produced as far as students going on to higher education, it's fairly impressive that in spite of the awkwardness and the funding pathway that they've had to go through, they've done a remarkable job in turning out 90% of the, from what I understand, 90% of the students go on to college. And so it's remarkable what they're doing. But I have a question for you, Senator Stimson. Does this bill fix all the issues that you see, since it's right there in your backyard, as far as the ability to go ahead and put out top-rated students?
It's a good start, Mr. Chairman. And I think as we work together over the interim, we'll refine this bill. I don't think this will be the silver bullet. It won't fix everything. But if we can just get Edgecombe on par with our other school districts, and we can get the ability of Edgecombe to have fair advocacy throughout the needs for capital improvements, I think it would be a big step forward.
Okay, great. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't go to Edgecombe either. But I had a rousing speech about how necessary this bill was. That's all been said. A couple of questions, and I have a couple of technical things just to fine-tune the bill. But on the fiscal note, can anyone help with the need for a year-round position to prepare applications for it? My understanding is that most REAAs don't have a year-round position for someone just to prepare their applications. That may be something they contract for. Does Edgecombe just need a year-round facilities person, and this bill is a convenient way, or is that something that we might fine-tune?
Mr. Alper.
Through the chair to Senator Keel, I'm going to profess a little bit of ignorance here. I had a brief conversation with the Department of Education, and they explained the conflict of interest issue that I highlighted earlier on in my presentation. Likely, yes, they could contract for this. Likely, it doesn't require an FTE. I know you're a big supporter of public employment versus contractors when there's an option. Maybe there's an existing person that could do this with half their life, but it did seem a bit excessive to my initial read that we needed a whole person for this task. I would be inclined to agree with you.
Follow-up, Senator Q.
Mr. Chairman, also a big fan of efficiency in government. The other question that was discussed a little bit at the Education Committee was the teacher housing maintenance piece and where that falls in the rankings relative to the school major maintenance, since it's the same fund. The presenter then expressed that they should be on an equal footing in terms of their importance. And I think there are things in existing law that will put the school, new school construction and major maintenance above the housing. So we may want to, if that is the goal of the committee, to put them on an equal footing, we may want to fine-tune that.
I'm sorry, Mr. Calper.
Mr. Chairman, I think Senator Keel makes a technically correct point. And should we be looking to amend this bill, if it's the will of the committee, we could certainly find language that would clarify that equal standing.
Okay. Any further questions by members? Oh, I'm sorry, Senator Bishop.
Thank you. I just want to dovetail back off as this bill goes forward. I'd like to work with the chairman's office, too, on this teacher housing, because this is something we talked about last session. And so we'll have those conversations with your permission. Also, I zeroed in on the fiscal note as well. I'm going to need education here to explain to me the fiscal note and why they need a separation. I can't get that through my head right now why we would need that once they make their explanation. Maybe I can warm up to the idea. The other thing I want to talk about here on this list that was just distributed by your office is we've got a just you mentioned Minto. It's at the bottom of the list. Okay, $11 million. It's $3.5 million underwater right now. From the bids went out. These numbers are stale. We've got to adjust these numbers, I think, annually for this inflation cycle that we're in. COVID has turned the world upside down, and if we fund these schools, we've got to have good numbers so when they go out to bid, they can be completed in that year. You know, and I'm not saying anything that this table doesn't understand, especially rural Alaska. When you order a barge or you order an airplane, you've got one construction season, and you're not going to mob and demob to do half a project or two-thirds of a project. So more to come on that. Thank you.
Mr. Alper, first of all, is there a date that this information was – what's the valid date for the information from the sheet that was passed out related to the REA fund?
Mr. Chairman, the date at the top of the sheet says October 24th, 2022. I'm guessing that that's when they put it together, and that was when the FY23 appropriation and the supplemental FY22 appropriation had been finalized, and they had the list of projects in the rightmost column, including the Minto project that Senator Bishop mentioned. We could certainly ask if there is updated information, but I only just received this a couple of days ago. I wanted to comment just to clarify in response to what Senator Bishop said. You, the legislature, appropriate this money. It goes to the REA fund. This is one of those funds, the way that it's constructed, that the money is expended without further appropriation. So there is no legislative process to approve $11.8 million to the Minto School, for example. That is an internal transfer within the Department of Education that they're able to do once we capitalize that fund. And I have to assume, but I can't say with certainty, that there's a process to apply for new money when there's a cost overrun or put some sort of contingency in there. But that would be the kind of question that we'd want to get the Department of Education in here to answer.
Okay. Any further comments or questions on the bill? If not, we'll open it to public testimony. I see nobody in the room to go ahead and testify. Is there anybody online to testify? There's nobody online to go ahead and testify, and so we'll close public testimony. Any further questions by members of the committee? If not, we'll set this bill aside until a further date. This concludes this morning's agenda. Our next meeting will be this afternoon at 1:30. We'll be introducing the new committee substitute version of the operating and mental health budgets. There's no other business to come before the committee. We're adjourned at 9:40.